Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks with Wall Street Reporter, and today I'm speaking with Mark Honan. He's the CEO of Kalahari Minerals, which trades on the London Exchange. The symbol is KAH. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Jack.
All right. Well, why don't we start off with if you can bring our audience up to date on some of Kalahari's projects in Namibia, and in particular your Rössing South uranium project.
Okay, thanks for that, Jack. Kalahari was came onto the AIM market in London in March 06. So we're about just over 3.5 years old. The company was originally formed around some base metal projects to the east of Windhoek, the capital of Namibia, and also a 49% joint venture in a property known as Husab, which is out near only about 48 kilometres from Walvis Bay, which is one of the safest and most reliable ports in southern Africa. And that was a 49% joint venture interest with an Australian company called Extract Resources. And we had a small exploration program, about a 60,000-metre drill program on an area to the south. All of that changed very dramatically in January 07 when Extract announced the discovery, January 08, when Extract announced the discovery of Rössing South, which is 7 kilometres south of the Rio Tinto Rössing mine, which has been operating since 1976. So that was a major step for Kalahari, and we then changed from a joint venture interest into a direct equity interest in Extract.
Okay, and before we go into some of the results you've gotten, what brought you to Namibia, and what makes that country so compelling for exploration?
Namibia was the last of the African nations to get independence. It got independence from South Africa in 1990. Up until the end of the First World War, it had been a German territory, and therefore it's got very strong, very good colonial controls. The infrastructure is particularly good. I was shown this opportunity in early 05, and I went down to have a look at Namibia and was extremely impressed by the caliber of the people and what was happening there. And we call it in simple terms Africa for beginners, because it is a very, very good environment to operate. As I mentioned earlier, Rio Tinto has been operating the Rössing mine since 1976. They've pulled 1 billion tons of ore out of the ground. They've been producing annually 8 million pounds of uranium. And at the time that we went there, another Australian company, Paladin, was in the process of opening up the Langer Heinrich mine, which from the end of their bankable feasibility to production was 12 months. And that is, to me, a world record. If we were to try and do the same thing in Australia, you would be looking at no less than 3 years. So it's a good environment, very good services. The properties are just south of the Trans-Kalahari Highway, with port, power, limited water now, but fortunately Areva bought the Trekopi Uranmin mine, and they are currently building a desalination plant. So it's, all those sort of issues hopefully will be ticked in the box and not a problem.
Okay, so essentially, you have a very favorable regulatory and infrastructure framework in Namibia. Is that it?
Very good indeed. Yes.
Okay, and you mentioned something interesting that this other project went into production within a period of about, you say, 12 months.
12 months from the end of the bankable feasibility till their first production.
Okay. Well, this, I guess that brings us to Rossing South. I guess you released some of the pre-feasibility estimates on the project. Can you share some of those highlights?
Yeah. Last Monday, Extract released their preliminary estimates, which is to bring into a production of 15 million pounds per annum, or for 14.8 exactly, which will rate us up in about the top six uranium mines in the world. The best thing about it is that Rossing, which has been producing since 76, is mining a grade of about 250 parts per million. Our head grade is about just shy of 500 parts per million. So it looks really very, very good. The production cost estimate is $23 a pound. So free cash flow should pay for the mine within 18 months.
Okay. So I think you had an estimate, if I remember, in the news release that the project cost was in the $700 million range to get the mine in.
$700 million if we use the historic standard run-of-the-mill Rossing-type plant, which is in-situ tank leach. Bannerman, our neighbours, Rio as well, have been looking at the options of heap leaching. And if we went the leach, just a pad leach, the cost would be probably about $200 million less. And the production per pound cost would decrease dramatically as well.
Okay. So uranium prices are kind of, are they holding about stable right now in the $40 pound range?
Spot price is in the 40, but you don't look at the spot. The uranium market does not deal on spot. Spot represents, I think, about 5% of sales that are made. If you look at Cameco, you look at Rio Tinto, Uranium One, these people are dealing direct with the end users, and all of those contracts, all of their contracts are between the $65 and $70 mark. Paladin came out with their last quarter, and their average for the last quarter, I think, was about $57 per pound.
Okay. So I guess if we do the math, that's $40 a pound at times. Did you say 12 million pounds that you could extract a year?
Yeah, just don't take $40 a pound. I wouldn't touch 40. I mean, you're between $50 and $70 a pound.
I meant so, the net, the sort of the after production cost.
Oh, sorry, after production cost, $40 a pound, yes.
Right.
On 15 million pounds, you're looking at 600 million.
Okay, so that seems pretty compelling. What is sort of the timeline of getting to production, assuming the capital could be raised?
Well, the plan at the moment is to get this thing into production by the end of 11, and that's as a standalone. You say if the capital can be raised for the construction, we don't look at that as a problem. There's a huge amount of interest in these projects. The end consumers are really the sovereign states, India, Korea, Japan, China. They're all desperately trying to secure supplies of uranium. And the worst case scenario is that we did a deal with one of the end takers to help fund the project.
Okay. So essentially, you're pretty confident that the capital issue will be solved.
Yeah. No. The project today, net present value on the project is in excess of 2.5 billion US. I mean, they're talking at the moment, the initial resource is just south of 300 million pounds. It's open. Zone 1 and Zone 2 are open to the north, to the south, and at depth. My estimate is that there's at least 500 million pounds sitting at Rossing South. You've now got two further discoveries to the south, which would add substantially to that. And, you know, over the next 10 years, this is going to become a very, very major resource.
Okay.
But, I mean, the short term at the moment, and put it in simple terms, Rio Tinto sold the Kintyre discovery in Western Australia at $8 a pound, $8 US. I think within the next 12 months, you're looking at 500 million pounds here. You know, just take your 300 at $8. You can either look at it at an NPV on production or you know, pound per in the ground. And whichever way, you're looking around 2.3 to 2.5 billion US is the value at the moment.
Of the project. And essentially, so if we do the math, you're basically worth 40% of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's roughly about $1 billion.
Yeah, we should be $1 billion US.
Okay, so which it's interesting. You know, your stock has been climbing recently, and you're I think right around at a 350 million market cap right now.
Yeah, about 340 sterling, which is, I guess, what's that at the moment? About 450 odd US.
Yeah. Okay, so it looks like there's some could be still some upside.
There's serious upside. I mean, we're talking about 300 million pounds. I'm extremely confident on 500 million.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the sort of the uranium market. You know, it was kind of something that heated up, then it cooled down. What's sort of the state of that market right now? What are the plants that are going into production, and how do you see the demand picture over the next years?
If you look out 3 years' time, there's going to be a vast hole in the demand against supply. These things don't come on quickly, and the funny thing about it is that it's unlike the fossil fuel power equation, whereas with fossil fuel, the power stations are really driven by how cheap the fuel is, because the power station costs nothing. These things, for a basic small nuclear power station, you're looking at $1 billion US. The things that they're building around Europe are about $10 billion. The fuel is very much secondary. So whether you're paying $50, $80, $120 a pound is really immaterial. It's really locking into long-term supply, and that's what the Chinese are getting extremely concerned about, and the Indians. You saw in late 06, early 07, there was a huge run-up in the uranium market, and that's when the hedge funds got involved. I mean, when Lehman Brothers went down, I think they had $1 billion worth of uranium lying around in a warehouse.
Okay. And you're saying that there's going to be a did you say there's going to be a hole in the supply-demand picture, in your words?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at in any of the projections that put forward, I mean, Cameco's got a real issue. Cigar Lake isn't going to come back on, so they can't meet some of their contracts. All of the suppliers are looking at the same thing. I mean, Areva is belting along to try and bring Trakopje and a couple of other new mines in, because the Areva model, Areva being the French nuclear giant, their model is that the mine is very secondary. Their primary business is selling nuclear power stations and locking in the supply of fuel. And at the moment, they've got a shortfall in what they can actually supply as what they're contracting to build.
Okay. That's quite interesting. Well, let's talk a little bit about your background and you know, some of the key members of your team.
Well, we're an interesting. I mean, my background is that I was involved in the. I'm an Australian. I was involved in the financial sector in the early 80s. I was involved in the mineral industry. I came to this with a passion for the industry, but the way Kalahari sits, we have our own geological team in Namibia. We've got a very highly skilled team that is working on the base metal projects. We ran, up until 18 months ago, we ran the uranium project for Extract. Extract has now got its own team. We took a fellow called Steve Galloway, who is a Namibian national, a geologist by training. He is managing director of a company called Ned Capital, which is part of Nedbank. They are the major financiers to the mining industry in Namibia. We put Steve on as chairman of Extract Resources. Extract has built a very strong team with our support, and we have Martin Spivey, who is the head of the geological team. Martin is Australian, originally Australian-based. He's now living in Namibia. But he is a very, very good, very highly skilled geologist. And at the moment, we are in the process of appointing a in-country chief executive of the uranium division.
Okay. Now, it looks like, you know, based on sort of the valuation that you have and the current stock price, it looks like there's a valuation gap. What is it that the investment community may not completely understand about, you know, the Kalahari story that, you know, perhaps you could articulate?
I think it's a natural where we are at the moment. I think the market is waiting to really see a confirmation of moving into becoming a miner. And the, you know, Extract has become recognized recently. I mean, it is now in the top 200 traded companies in Australia. Kalahari, as you mentioned, it has had recognition. I think we're still undervalued by about 50%. But I think all of that, as we move forward into the process of developing the mine, and we see coming closer to cash flow, the market will give it a different recognition.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are some?
I mean, in basically, we're still classed as an exploration company, where we really are now at that, the cusp of being a company that actually has a serious resource.
Okay. What are some of the milestones that investors can look forward to over the next, 18 months or so as you move towards that production?
The first stage of the bankable feasibility should be published within the next 2 months. Apart from that, within every month, Extract, as it's ASX listed, has to keep publishing the drill results from the program to meet the ASX requirements. And you'll see the further announcements on Zone 2. And then, of course, you've got the new discoveries to the south, Zones 3 and Zone 4. So there'll be continual addition to the resource. And those announcements will come out on a regular basis. And the stunning thing, I mean, the actual stunning thing, which I think the market is only just really beginning to digest now, is the actual grades. I mean, the grades of this thing is exceptional.
It's interesting. You mentioned the grade is about double what the neighboring mines are getting.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the neighbor to the immediate west, Bannerman, ASX, TSX listed, they're dealing with about 200 parts. You've got to the northeast, you've got the Valencia deposit, which is Forces, TSX listed. Forces has just announced yesterday that they're on the point of completion with George Forrest International at $6.70 US a pound, and that's less than 200 parts. And then, of course, you've got the Rossing mine that's been producing for years just north of us, and, you know, our estimate there is that they're using about 250 parts per million ore.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's finish off with in your opinion, what makes Kalahari a particularly compelling for investors today? What would you say are the top three value drivers investors should be looking at?
Kalahari has just short of 40% of extract, so therefore it controls extract. We don't control it from a management point of view, but if anyone really wants to look at this resource, if you're Chinese or you're Koreans, the Indians, anyone who really wants to have a crack at this resource, they've got to come knocking on the Kalahari door. So obviously Kalahari should be at a premium to the extract price, and we're at a discount at the moment. We are well set. Sitting here in London, we have the capital to maintain our position. We have a very strong shareholder base. I think from that perspective, we're very, very easy. And from the other perspective, we have these base metal projects, which we are working on to bring them into production in the near term as well.
Okay, great. Well, we'll certainly look forward to following your progress in the coming months. Thank you, Mark.
Well, thank you for your interest, Jack.